My in-laws' apartment was not raided, and they could stay in that apartment. Since my in-laws knew that we hoped to emigrate a couple of weeks hence, they said we should move in with them, which we did. My parents remained with that woman in the former neighborhood. And by that time, food rationing was installed already, and Jews got only a reduced quantity and quality food through stamps. My mother later reported some heartwarming incidents that former Gentile neighbors, when they met mother in the street, would press a brown bag in mother's hand, just passing by with a few white rolls in it, which Jews couldn't buy. And that some had the courage to say, "Good morning, Mrs. Steinhardt," or "Good evening," you know, which was an act of courage. We stayed at my in-law's house, and when our invitation to the American consulate on the 21st happened, there were no incidents. We were examined and found in good health and given our visa. Then we had rushed, we had made a reservation with the Holland America line, and received our tickets then, paying cash. At that time, we still could pay in marks, because if we couldn't, we would have been lost too. And we took a train to Holland, to Vlissingen. The English name is Flushing. We went from Austria through Germany, through Holland, to that harbor. I don't know whether I told you that orally before or repeat myself what happened on our arrival in Flushing. I don't know if you have that on tape or not.
Let's hear it.
There were a few other couples on the train with us, with whom we became acquainted on the trip, Jewish couples or families with one child. And when we got off the train, we had discussed what we would do, because we only had 10 marks worth, which at that time was $2.50 in our pockets. The boat line gave us something like $60 worth for German marks, which we paid. And they hoped, the boat line, that we would spend those dollars on the boat, which of course we had sworn never to spend a penny, but to arrive at that. So actually we had $2.50 in our pocket. And we worried where we would stay from the 24th to the 26th, the date of our departure, the boat's departure. When we alighted from the train, there were four or six gentlemen, well-dressed gentlemen, standing there and asked us, "Are you from Vienna? Jewish people from Vienna fleeing Germany?" We said, "Yes." They said, "Come with us." And they brought us to I can't recall the outside, but to a hotel, and said, in the lobby, they said, "Here are the keys to your rooms." They handed each of a couple a key to the room. We passed by a dining room, which was set in white, and this is where you're going to have your dinner and the meals till your departure. You'll be guests of the Jewish community of Flushing. And you never could thank them enough, of course. So we had our meals there, our dinners there, we're eternally grateful. On one of the walks, we passed a temple of the Masons, and one of our men, a lawyer, a former lawyer in Vienna, went in and came back with a pocket full of money. He said the brothers had supplied him with money. The boat trip, being in winter, it really was. We were on the boat to December 8th. Can you imagine that? We had a terrible storm in the Atlantic. I was seasick from the first moment to the last. My husband wasn't seasick, enjoyed the food, enjoyed his freedom there. I was only dragged up on deck at 8 in the morning and taken down at 11. And many of the people were, because our nerves were just not in a state to take a winter, stormy winter trip. Once the stewardess, or whatever you call her, which is another name of the boat, said, "Now you've got to take a bath. I filled a tub for you and we'll go in." Well, she dragged me in and I looked at the tub, which was filled with a brown fluid, which stood from the top of one side of the tub to the bottom of the tub on the other side, telling me under which angle the boat was tilted. Stomach made another turn, and I turned around, so no bath for me. So, and that's the way I arrived in New York City. My husband said that he had packed the suitcases, which of course he had to unpack some during the day, during 10 days trip. We were to meet strangers, and they were present, they were very kind to us, a couple. No, just the woman was there with her own personal secretary. And she said the secretary would take care of our luggage in a cab, and her chauffeur would take us with her. She was going with us to the inspection. And when the officers opened the suitcase, I wanted to sink there into the ground the way my husband had packed the suitcases, meeting strange people for the first time. Well, anyway, that was the fun. And the people was very nice. They were very nice. They took us to a hotel on 23rd Street, and we stayed there. Actually, we had two bathrooms, and my husband and I took baths and called to each other from one bathroom to the other, and had us for dinner that night and many night. Their house was exquisite in the upper, in the 80s on the east side, and with personnel galore, and they paid the hotel for us, and then they said they had a country estate to which they went for 1 week, and we were designated dog watchers in the apartment. A taxi would come and take us to the entrance of Central Park, and we were to go a certain path to the next exit of the park with a dog, where the taxi would await us again and took us back to the apartment. And we lived in that golden cage for a week. She warned me not to go to the kitchen. It was a house, just three front windows, you know, the real estate in that section. And they had an elevator in the house. You went by elevator to your own kitchen. You went by elevator to the living room. You went by elevator to the bedrooms. And she warned me I could visit the cook when she was here, but she warned me not to go at any other time so as not to disarray the kitchen or anything. The cook didn't like that, and she was afraid of losing the cook. Well, anyway, these people were very kind. And right away, we had the courage to start baking again. My husband's brother, in great danger in Vienna, had a way of escaping illegally through Germany into Belgium if he could show what they called the pocket money, which was $200 in cash that he would have to show to the Belgian police if captured.
Do you recall we told this story?
I told the story.
Yeah.
Now, I don't recall whether I told it on tape or just in
conversation. Yes, you told us this about your brother-in-law being married to a Gentile.
Yeah.
Your brother-in-law escaped illegally.
Right.
She came legally. And so
yeah. Yeah.
Is there more in that story that you want
to... No, there isn't. There isn't. They finally settled and made their way. He doesn't live anymore, but it just ends.
Could you reflect on the behavior of the Jewish people between March and November while you remained in Austria?
Yes, I can. They became very secretive. Strangely enough, not banding together, but like ants, an ant heap you step upon where the ants scurry in all directions. I could always think of that picture only. Each and everyone ran their own way and didn't dare to tell even their best friends for fear it would diminish their own chance if somebody else would try that. There was a time where we were very angry at some of our friends and we heard all of a sudden the so-and-so left yesterday. I had a very close friend, very, whom had gone through school and through university, and she had seen what happened on March 17 in front of my parents' door. She happened to still have maintained through her parents the Czechoslovakian citizenship, and on the 18th of March, she went to France. I heard about that. She called me up, she was decent enough and said, goodbye, I'm going to Paris tomorrow. I said, please don't forget me. Write to me. I couldn't say more. She knew what I meant. And that darn thing sent me a picture postcard of the Eiffel Tower saying, I'm happy here. I think as a governess, you could make your way here. No return address, nothing. That was the end of one great friendship. Although I tried in many ways to find many other friends, and some I succeeded, some I didn't. This one I didn't even follow up. The Jewish community itself was in great disarray, I think. It could have been, now I don't know about it, that they helped financially to people who needed the help, but about that I don't know, we only guessed.
Were there Jews that seemed to, the informers, or in any way capitulate or undermine efforts of other Jews?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. I don't think that happened. I know that the Quakers came and helped a lot, especially offering money. Of course, they had no power of helping with the visa, but they had tips. They came from the outside world, and they informed many Jews of where and how they could go. There might have been Jewish people from foreign countries who did the same thing, but I hadn't heard of them. There might have been.
An isolated fact, you spoke of a congressman in the 40s who was influential in behalf of people coming to Pittsburgh. Do you remember his name?
Oh, yeah. I won't say.
Okay. All right, we're going to get back to our...
I can say to you privately, but not on tape.
Okay. We're going to get back to our format, and we spoke of your first jobs in this country. You're setting up a house. We didn't speak yet of raising your children.
When the war started, when the United States entered the war, my husband, of course, was drafted, as every man in that age group. We were still living in a two-room, two-and-a-half-room apartment in East Liberty. At that time, we were in our 30s already, and we were considering having children, but this being very difficult with career just starting, and my husband's future, army or not, very insecure, we held off. In 1943, my husband was notified because of his poor eyesight that he was classified 4F. Then we felt some reassurance, and in 1944 my son was born. In 1946 my daughter was born, and in 1949 we sort of could afford to buy a little house in Forest Hills.
You want to give us your children's names for the record?
Yes, my son is Leslie George Albert. And my daughter is Susan Camille, C-A-M-I-L-L-E. Named after a beloved young sister of my mother's who had died by suicide in 1941 in Germany. She had married a German. Her children were mixed. And she had had a wonderful life with a wonderful husband. But the children were persecuted. The boy, Ed, he was born 1917, was killed in an SS camp. And the daughter was dragged through Sudeten Germany. She survived in very poor health, and very poor, although well-educated and brought up in good circumstances. I loved my Aunt Camille. Strangely enough, in the fall of 1937, when Hitler was already all over Germany, she had visited us, my mother and family, in Vienna, and said, "Please, children, what are you waiting for? Get out, get out." Still, somehow, we didn't listen to her because we had no way. Well, I loved her very much, and I gave my daughter to me. Want to know anything else about my children?
Well, let's talk about raising.
Raising them?
Yes.
When my father died in 48, my father had been ill for a long time, and I could only go and visit with my parents to help mother out a little bit. Now I say not enough, although I had small children. Maybe I should have managed better, but I didn't. Mother came to live with us in Forest Hills. And one of the reasons that we settled in Forest Hills was that we thought it was not too far from the center, from Pittsburgh, and had a good school system. And the population was of an educated, intellectual level that we would be happy to associate. Now, the later years, there has been quite a number of Jewish homeowners in that section. At that time, there weren't that many. But it seemed that we just didn't feel we should go somewhere and make special. Well, the truth was we couldn't afford anything in Squirrel Hill. And that was the truth. And we stayed there till 1959, where we decided that the children had wonderful childhood there, had talked to every squirrel and climbed every tree there on our dead end street. But they needed to know about the city lights, about the green and red lights in the streets and the traffic, and go to the shoemakers and the barbers themselves. So we moved. And here, this is where I still am.
Children easy to raise?
At that time, they were easy. Now I wish they had been harder in their childhood and not as hard as they are now.
You talked about starting the parent teachers or starting a kindergarten in Forest Hills, I believe.
Yes.
Tell us about
that.
That's
one of the pictures there. I made a friend in Forest Hills. The man was Jewish, the wife wasn't. Lovely people. I'm still friends with both of them. Fortunately, they're both still alive and in decent health. And we found that our children needed company. They were at that age where they had to have playmates. Well, mine had playmates in the street. They were either all girls and they were Gentiles, and they weren't exactly what we wanted them to associate with. So we got together and the two boys played together and the two girls played together. One day they were in my neighborhood and one day they were at her house. So it worked out, and then Muriel and I decided we ought to have a kindergarten here in this section for our children. And we petitioned the school system. I don't know how well this is recorded in public records. I hope I don't say anything wrong. But I think we collected signatures petitioning the school district to open a kindergarten. And shortly thereafter, it was established.
As part of their regular school
as
system.
As part of their regular school system.
Do you remember the date?
Should be around 1950. I also remember there was a old Jewish cemetery in our neighborhood. And my children walked to school. It was a good 30 minutes walk up on top of the hill, and had to pass by the cemetery. And I taught my children early, do not go in. The doors were open, you know, in the cemetery, and there was a low fence on it. I think it is still being used. Rarely I read in the paper that some of the outlying districts, Braddock or further out, they use it. Not to go nearby. I remember my dear mother, when she wanted to take a walk and be alone, she went to the cemetery. It was her place to be alone. And once a while, my children knew that I loved flowers. One or the other would come with a big branch of the first cherry blossom. I said, where did you get them? And they just had stolen them from some neighbors on their way. Otherwise, they had a very happy childhood in the school system. They both graduated from, at that time was called Forest Hills Junior High. At that time, a senior high didn't exist. The Churchill area school was built after they were through, and I had the choice of either sending them to Edgewood, which was a long and dangerous away, or to Wilkinsburg, which I didn't like. That was one of the reasons for our move. And at that time, the local high school was a very high standing. And that's where they went.
You mean Taylor Auburn?
Taylor Auburn.
Did they have any Jewish education while they were in Forest Hills?
Yes. They went to Sunday school to Roder Shalom.
This is where your mother...
When my mother lived with us, and my mother took them on the bus there and brought them home, enjoyed herself during the morning there. And at that time, there were no bar or bas mitzvahs at Roder Shalom, and they both had their... Confirmation there. There were big classes, 50, 40 at that age. And my son was very active following that in the, it wasn't the junior congregation, it was the youth group there. And he once was on a debating team under Mr. Cavalier. He enjoyed it very much. And that happened at the time of the Eichmann trial, at which Mr. Cavalier put a stack of books in front of him and said, read them. And that helped him to take a stand now and in the world and be really, not that we didn't tell him enough, that they didn't know enough.
What was social life for the family like in those days?
Well, in while we lived in Forest Hills, we met a few people that, by accident, met a few people from Vienna. We didn't have too much of a social life. I was active in the PTA there, and we met some people there. I can't recall that we were in any way very active socially. Well, some. Mother took the bus and went here to the council lounge and made some elderly friends, and they came once in a while and visited us. And we had some friends from the beginnings. When we moved into Squirrel Hill, we became very active members in the Friendship Club. And that was a high percentage of our social contacts. But there were many others too. In the first years when I worked as a group worker in Kingsley House, I had many friends in that group, and we were very, the husbands and the wives of the workers, we were a very compatible social group there. But wandering birds or flying birds that social workers are, especially group workers, unmarried or with young families, we kept losing them, and so it wasn't a steady thing, but it was very enjoyable, and with many of them I'm still in touch.
Okay, did you take vacations as a family?
Yes, we did. We, as soon as we could, we rented a cottage on Lake Erie, and our children became water sports people. I took them from Forest Hills already. I took them by bus to the Y on Belfield Street for their swimming lessons. And we made trips to Lake Erie. And we made trips to Jennerstown, wherever the nearby lakes are. And we enjoyed our things with picnics with the families, with Friendship Club people.
If we can